I'm Sophie Natto, and you're listening to the second season of The Middle. If you're a media geek and work in public relations, journalism, or marketing, you're in the right place.
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, saying it's a falsehood. Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
Today, we're talking about the challenge of fact-checking both in and beyond the newsroom. Who's ultimately responsible to get things right? And does anyone care about the truth anymore? Jack Nagler is currently the ombudsman for the CBC, a creative and ethical force at the public broadcaster. He's been with the newsroom since 1990. Mihira Lakshman is the director of the Walrus Lab, which is the business-sponsored content end of the publication. He has more than a decade of experience in journalism with several Canadian media brands. So welcome to you both. So pleased to have you on the podcast.
Likewise.
Glad to be here.
Okay, let's get into this. So let's set the clock back a decade. Before Trump, before the freeway that is social media, and get right back to the basics. What is the point of fact-checking, Jack?
What isn't the point of fact-checking? I mean, my goodness, fact-checking is everything in journalism, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people can get information from a million different places. Why would they come to you for information if mm-hmm. you can't get it right? And mm-hmm. that matters about the small things, it matters about the big things. So if you can't check your facts, if you can't get things straight, you have no credibility, you have no brand, you have no hope.
Right. Although we've seen trust numbers in media sort of, you know, be diminished over time. Mihira, like, we were both trained in J school, I think, in and around the same time. And you know, I remember a very rigorous process of, like, you know, you get this right because your entire job's on the line. You know, nowadays, I'm not sure it's the same. What's your read on that evolution?
Oh, it's a lot more fast and loose, I think, as a general practice right now, which is scary. When you think about it, not only just on the journalism side, but everybody is a publisher now. You don't have to be a journalist to be
a
publisher.
Just need a phone.
You just need a phone and a thought. And that's problematic. There's credibility issues at play. There are safety issues at play when you see things that are going out there that are not factual. But I mean, back to what Jack said, if you don't have the facts, what do you have? Mm-hmm. And we grew up, I think, if you look at 10, 20 years ago when we were coming up in this business, you're taught three sources.
Yes. You know, what happened to three sources, Jack? What happened? I see single source stories constantly, and not just at the CBC, elsewhere also.
Yeah. No, I mean, the standard for sourcing doesn't always have to be three. It doesn't always have to be one. Sometimes it needs to be five. Sometimes it can be one. I mean, if you go to the mayor of Toronto to say, are you running for re-election? And he says yes.
That's fair.
You don't need to double source.
Fair enough.
But if you're doing an investigation that actually requires verification of the things people are saying, you bet you're going to need multiple sources. So it's more of a judgment call.
So it depends.
Yeah. And I think if you look at how people are getting those sources, it's evolved over time too. Email interviews are happening mm-hmm. where you're not even picking up the phone mm-hmm. and you don't know who is answering these emails.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know if they're lying to you, right? You know, when you're speaking to someone face-to-face, you can tell body language. You can understand a little bit of some of the other nonverbal communicators.
You can ask follow-up questions and challenge them. Have a real conversation that's spontaneous.
Yeah, that's definitely a control mechanism for a lot of companies and spokespeople, right? It can box you into exactly what it is that they want to say at any given time.
Yeah.
It's definitely a technique. Jack, you've been doing this for a long time.
What are you saying,
Sophie? I'm saying that you've seen, you know, our classically trained journalistic frame for fact checking, and you're now living in a world where you're getting pushed on Twitter and elsewhere to daily validate the journalism the CBC puts out. I mean, what have you noticed changed over time?
Wow. Okay. You only have half an hour for this
podcast,
right?
Yeah, it's okay.
Right?
Just dig in. It's cool. We'll take whatever you got.
No, there are so many things that have changed. And I think it's funny that people think it's okay to be looser on facts, because now that everybody can Google everything you say and double check you, well, you should be more rigorous on facts than you ever were before. So the idea that somehow it should be acceptable to be less rigorous is just crazy. And I have a really hard time understanding that. But the nature of checking facts has become infinitely more complicated. In part because it's no longer just facts you're checking. You're checking, you know, you have deep fakes, for instance. And now you can see something and hear something that a generation ago you would have gone, well, that's it. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've heard it with my own ears.
Or we have AI written copy now too, that's becoming more and more popular.
That's right.
As well. Like, How do we navigate that?
It's really difficult. Yeah. And you know, journalistic organizations and other organizations, I'm sure, are trying to navigate it on a couple of different fronts. I mean, number one, the stuff that's incoming that you receive, you have to figure out, all right, how am I going to check this? What's the provenance of that video? What was the source of this? How do we know that it wasn't played with technically? Mm-hmm. But you also have problems outgoing because people may decide to take your brand and create something that represents, it could be the CBC, it could be Edelman, it could be anybody else. Mm-hmm. And what can you do to make sure that there's some kind of mechanism for people to determine whether it's legitimate or not? And I know what one of the things people have talked about is even having like the equivalent of the vehicle identification number on your car to show that it's legit. Could you put something like that on a video to say, well, this actually belongs to us?
I mean, Mihira, while Jack is being like deeply rooted in values and thoughtful thinking on fact checking, meanwhile, you guys are being paced by competitors who don't care.
Oh, there's a reality out there.
Don't care. Namely, President Trump, but also so many other, sources, media organizations, they just don't care.
Absolutely. And everything that Jack said is true. And it's no surprise that you would say that the development of social media and speed, the pressure to be first and the pressure to be fast has changed it all. That's no excuse for not fact-checking, or it's no excuse for getting things wrong. It's just a reality that is out there. And you're also facing competition from people who aren't even, or from organizations who don't have the same rigor as the CBC or, or the Toronto Star or the Globe Mail or anyone else in that sense, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a big issue that you have, where it's always been the pressure to get it first and get it right. Both are equally important, and not everyone is held to the same standard.
Yeah. I mean, Jack, too, the concern I have, when I left media a decade ago, resources were an issue at that point. Mm-hmm. You hear a lot these days about resources driving, some of these problems. And it makes me wonder if that's a reasonable excuse, right? Like op-eds running without full clearances, things going to press without actually following a procedure. Can we blame resources on some of this problem? Is it okay to do that? Or what's your lens on that?
I'm going to use semantics here. It makes some of these problems and mistakes understandable. That doesn't make them acceptable.
Okay.
And it doesn't make it. It's not a good excuse.
Right. But it's terrible for media brands too, I think, right? Because it erodes their trust.
Absolutely. Look, we exist now in a society where people are deeply skeptical, not just of journalism, but of every other kind of institution that exists out there.
Right.
And so they're predisposed to go, why should I believe what you're doing? And so the challenge now is not just to get the facts right, but how do you get the facts right in a way that gives people confidence that you're right? And so you get into transparency and how can we show how we know what we say we know? That's some serious levels of
showing your work.
Accountability, yeah. Yeah. Really,
and,
right?
And I think we've seen copy editors being downsized across the board, and fact checkers going the wayside, going that same way. And when you talk about resources, one of the things that we're trying to do at The Walrus actually is provide fact checking resources for companies and organizations and even media companies that need them.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about that because, as a trained journalist, when I do work with clients here at Edelman, I'm pushing fact-checking hard because I know it makes a difference to the end users, connectivity to the content and also just overall trust of their brands. It's interesting to me that you're creating fact-checking as a product beyond the newsroom. Why did you guys decide to do that?
Yeah, I think it's because if you look at who's publishing out there, brands are now publishing on their own platforms. They are not needing to go through traditional media outlets. And as such, the brands need credibility. They need to be trusted. They can't put false information out there or else they risk hurting their trust rating. And you know better than anyone else that the trust ratings are really crucial to brands and companies and corporations. So we saw a need for that. We also have developed a pretty robust fact-checking guide at The Walrus. And we thought, well, there's got to be another use for this other than just fact-checking work in The Walrus in print and online. And it turns out there were clients that were interested in doing whatever they could to improve their trust rating. And fact-checking is one of those services that we can offer. But I also think that when you talk about resources and companies that or organizations that don't have that, in the same way they hire a copy editor, I think we may see that hiring a fact checker could be something that happens down the road. A freelance fact checker could be quite common. And you even look at books. Books aren't typically fact checked, but we are seeing a few high profile cases where they need to be.
I mean, Jack, how do you feel about this? I mean, is this appropriation of journalism, basically? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I know this is a strong word, but the reality is that more and more on my side of the house, we are seeing journalistic behavior being, you know, productized.
Yeah, but I don't think you look at this simply as a case of, gee, is my place in society as a journalist somehow being threatened? You have to look at this as a citizen and say, how do I have a society that functions? And if there are more people who are trying to confirm things and make sure that the information that's floating out there in the space is accurate, that's a good thing.
I mean, you're cool with business and others who have an interest in maintaining trust being a player in this space and helping to keep things real.
Of course. I mean, look, there's always a slippery slope of some kind, and you wonder what people's motivations are. And look, there is a distinction that sometimes I draw that makes my colleagues roll their eyes sometimes about the difference between facts and truth.
Yeah, explain that. Break that down for us.
Well, so, you know, we know facts are things that we can say this happened, when it happened, mm-hmm. where it happened, how it happened, all that.
The world is round.
Yeah, right. But, you know, a group of facts without some kind of context or analytical framework don't necessarily represent a truth.
Right.
But at the same time, in an effort to get to a truth, if you take a shortcut around the facts, you can get yourself into a very nasty place. And so, you know, you see that journalistically in the way that some of the coverage, particularly in the U.S., of Donald Trump is. Mm-hmm. That people want to always frame it through he's evil and he's horrible. Or they always want to frame it through he's heroic and he's a wonderful guy.
Right.
And so you end up actually manipulating facts as a way of serving your truth. And that's not the way that you're supposed to do it.
Well, at least that's what we believe. I mean, certainly there are people who don't believe that, right? Who think that, in fact, it's now a free-for-all and the media is corrupt. And so this is where we're inevitably going to end up and everybody gets to fight for whatever they think the truth is. And that part's okay.
Well, they may think that if that value prevails, we're probably not going to be in a very happy place.
Yeah, that's depressing. I mean, Mihira, you know, the idea that you guys are trying to get companies to buy onto this, like, have you talked to me about some of your clients and like why they're looking at the service or why they're thinking about jumping on board with the idea?
Yeah, and I should mention that we're early in the days, so we haven't had a ton of clients, but we've had a lot of interest in tell me more about this.
Yeah.
The clients that we have had, I think, have been putting out, you could say, white papers or public papers where they're trying to influence policy. And there's a lot of technical research that's in there. They have copy editors, but they simply don't have the resources or the capacity to check every fact. Mm-hmm. And if they get caught on one fact being incorrect, then it destroys the credibility of what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So,
But what makes you guys the arbiters of truth? Like, how do you become that? I mean, Jack, obviously, like, you've been doing it a long time, and the CBC trusts you and trusts your opinion, and presumably that's why you're in your job.
I hope.
Yeah. I hope. But in your case, we're here, like, did you guys wake up just one morning and the walrus is like, we are the truth.
No.
We are the facts.
I don't think anyone's trying to say that the walrus is the arbiter of truth, but I think what they are trying to say is the walrus has a long reputation of fact-check journalism, mm-hmm. and promoting fact-based conversations. That's part of what we do. We have a pretty detailed manual on how to fact-check, mm-hmm. and we follow it pretty rigorously, and we can do that for someone else, too. So I think that there's some value in that.
You said, too, that you had to get some kind of certification to match this, or how did that work?
So there is an international fact-checking network, and it's run by, organizations that want to be credited have to go through the Poynter Institute, which is a nonprofit based in the United States, mm-hmm. That's a bit of a journalism overseer. And once you're credited as part of the International Fact-Checking Network, Facebook is hiring those organizations to fact-check content on Facebook. So we're going through the process right now to become accredited through the IFCN. And Poynter has a number of requirements that they take you through to ensure that you're transparent, that you're independent, you're following procedures. It's a long list, and it takes a long time to get approved. And we're in the middle of that right now, but it's not easy.
Right. I mean, Jack, how do we feel about the Facebook part?
Can I pass? No.
Everybody always wants to, but we shouldn't. We shouldn't because, you know, there are very few players who can afford playing in the space and doing it well. So, I mean, it's obviously a good idea. It's a good idea to try and propel facts.
Of
but
course.
Still Facebook.
Yeah, well, Facebook is an organization, and that's what Facebook is. We can all make our own judgments about how we think Facebook is or isn't conducting itself in a responsible manner. But, you know, if there is an effort that's being made to have things that are more factual get preference, mm-hmm. You know, you have to weigh that as I look at that as something that's really good, and that's a very positive thing. But you do have to weigh that as a value against the value of saying free and unfettered expression is its own virtue. Mm. So I land somewhere. You know, you may land somewhere else.
Right. So, and you guys made that calculation, presumably, in agreeing to participate in this process, that it's worth doing.
Exactly.
Even if there are concerns around.
You're right. It's there's always going to be concerns about who you're, starting a relationship with.
Yeah.
But we certainly saw the positive value that can come out of this and the need. Mm-hmm. I think Facebook certainly sees the need in that too, which is, you know, I think a big reason why there are so many organizations around the world that are now trying to get in to be part of that international fact-checking network.
Right.
And beyond that, too, we have a consulting relationship with Facebook where they trust organizations like the Walrus and see value in aligning themselves with the Walrus. So we're helping advise them on their local news accelerator project, for example, which is to improve the quality of local news across Canada. So I think that trust, the fact that the Walrus has a reputation of fact-based journalism makes us valuable to companies like Facebook.
That's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the Trust Project. It's a project that's, you know, both it started in the U.S., but a number of Canadian newsrooms are participating. Jack, can you break down what the Trust Project is and whether it's working or not?
Yeah, so in essence, it's an exercise in which organizations embrace a certain number of protocols and standards that say these are factors in journalism that allow you to trust this organization. So it can be everything from saying that, we have standards and that you have the ability to access those standards. Mm-hmm. Obviously at CBC, we have what we call our journalistic standards and practices, the JSP that
Did you not write that?
So I did the most recent version of it, which came out last year.
Yeah. Was it hard to do?
I didn't do it by myself. There were a lot of people doing a lot of things. It's complicated.
Right.
Because there are so many scenarios you can be trying to grapple with that you can't possibly cover all of them. So we do ours in a sort of aspirational sense. It reads more like the Constitution than it does Bill C-22, right?
Yeah.
And so that allows you to at least develop an ethical framework that says we're always going to reach a dilemma where you don't really know what the right thing is to do. So what are the values? What are the principles that guide us in making these decisions so that we properly weigh obviously accuracy is a critical thing. You need to be fair to people. You need to be balanced. But sometimes different things come into conflict and they're difficult to resolve.
Yeah. Yes, keep going.
I got off topic here.
No, you didn't. I mean, I think it's really interesting. I mean, we care a lot more about this stuff than regular people. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes wonder if fact-checking and these trust-building projects are really for the haves and people who can afford it. And you think about like polarization in media and there being two camps, like, you know, media for, you know, the poor and media for people who can afford subscriptions and pay for quality like New York Times and that. And I worry sometimes that, you know, you'll get the facts if you're with, you know, one of the elite publications, but you may not get the facts if you're with an everyday free publication that maybe doesn't have the resources to do the work.
Well, I guess I would say that social media has a role to play in that then. If Facebook and Twitter start to privilege fact-check content, then
that's a good word. Privilege fact-check, right? Yes. That's actually a great way to describe it.
That would force publishers to really take this a lot more seriously.
But do people care? Like, this is the thing. We care, but do everyday people care?
I think people may not care until they realize they have to. And think of it I'll put it in the most banal sense. We all have that certain someone in our social media feed who sends garbage all the time.
And none of my friends do that.
No, your friends, Sophie, friends. Are fantastic.
Mine are fine.
And Mihira's are fine.
I have a couple. You have weird people in your feed.
The people I hang out with, you know.
OMG.
I'll show you how to block.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But, you know, when you see someone who you like and respect and they send something that is clearly false, you go, really? And you get frustrated with that person.
Of course, yeah.
So nobody wants to frustrate their friends and their loved ones. We want to be right. And when we share stuff, we want to be right. And we want to get good, you know, think that we know what we're talking about. Nobody wants to be an idiot.
I mean,
there are some people who I'm sure just love to stir the pot and they don't care about whether things are right. But the vast majority of people want to be right.
Yeah.
So we need to give them the tools to you know, whether it's media literacy campaigns or whether it's, ability to access, different places that will do fact checking for you.
Right.
And to give them signs of here are places that are credible and privilege information that's going to be accurate. Well, that's all to the good. And so whether they think this is a fundamental concern of mine is kind of beside the point because it will affect their lives.
And over here, his position is quite positive and rosy.
I would even go one step further. So we're not, I think right now the public, you're right, some people care, some people don't. And I think, as Jack said, over time, more and more will start to care because of those exact examples.
Mm-hmm.
And brands, if they don't care right now, they should start to care about being factual in what they're putting out there.
If anything, there's a risk that they could be dragged out into the public square and embarrassed for not doing it properly.
Absolutely.
Right?
And even with branded content and sponsored content, advertorial, so to speak, we fact check that at The Walrus. It's not good for a brand to put something out there that is potentially misleading, even if it's paid content.
Yeah.
Just because it's paid doesn't mean it can't be true.
No, bullshit's terrible for your brand, ultimately, right? And I think there's a desire to maybe play a little bit loose with that sometimes, but ultimately, like, audiences are getting smarter with time, I hope, anyways. And so, yeah, it's not a good idea. Though, Jack, aren't you frustrated? You can't possibly... I mean, I'm thinking of the podcast we did last year with Kathy and Esther, your predecessor, about just the frustration about, you know, screaming into the wind about what facts and truth is. And when there are so many people who, you know, they just don't subscribe to what we're thinking about. And Trump has made it a lot worse.
Yeah, we live in a time that's really, really difficult. Whether you want to call it, echo chambers or whether you want to call it polarization, whatever the term is, people are in camps. And so, you know, we as an industry in journalism, but, you know, you and your industry and any brand that's trying to get out there in the public space needs to be able to persuade people that they are worth paying attention to and they're credible. And really, at the end of the day, facts are what you have. And
but is it worth fighting people for it? I mean, because, you know, like, should we be fighting harder? Should there be more effort being made on social, for instance, to fight, to challenge people on their version of the facts?
It's a really good question. I think that you have a choice to make about how you want to present yourself in the public space. And every organization can decide, okay, yeah, no, we're going to be out there and confront everyone, and that has upsides and downsides. Being a little bit more passive and saying, no, we're not going to, you know, get into this fray where we're arguing with every dog that nips at our heels. And just let the quality of our content speak for itself is another way of presenting it.
I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that the future of democracy depends on it, because if you look at facts going around on social media, or non-facts going around, lies going around on social media, that has affected elections. We know that that is true. So if we don't invest in taking this a lot more seriously, it's going to have far-reaching impacts.
It's so interesting because, you know, corrections, for instance, like we'll often in media training say, like, make sure you're right in the interview. Correct yourself if you're not. If the journalist says something wrong, correct the journalist in that moment, because I can call CBC and try to get a correction. But when was the last time you read a correction? Like, only people like us, like, enjoy the corrections. Nobody else notices them, I think.
Oh, you know what? I actually would dispute that.
Okay, tell me why.
So I think you're right to the extent that corrections in broadcast...
Impossible.
They can be meaningless unless you really heard the story the first time and remember what they said and all those things. It's important to do it to set the record straight, but they may not have a lasting impact. But everybody goes and looks stuff up online. And if you, in the digital space, when you do a correction, it's there.
If
you do it and it's prominent, and at CBC, they're extremely diligent about that and saying, like, look, here's what was said that was wrong. Here's what the actual fact is. That's always there. Like, that's a really powerful thing to do.
It was remind me what your policy is. It to delete do you delete tweets or posts that are incorrect? How do you guys handle
that? So on Twitter, the best practice that we found is you take a screenshot of the bad tweet.
The bad moment.
The bad moment. Yeah. And so then you delete it, but because you have the screenshot, you issue a correction that says, here, we did this.
So you own it. You don't try to hide it.
If you try to conceal those things, all you do is erode trust, right? Like, you know, people used to think mistakes are like, oh, people will think we're not credible, and you swept it under the rug. That's crazy. Like, we've realized that the way you build trust with people and build a connection is to be honest and say, oops, we goofed. Here's what we should have done. So that when you get to that point where someone's challenging you and you defend yourself, hopefully people will realize, wow, they're always upfront about it when they make a mistake. Mm-hmm. If they're standing their ground now, they must really know what they're talking about.
I mean, here, ultimately, the success of your venture and this fact-checking outside of the newsroom is dependent upon companies being willing to subject themselves to this process.
Yeah, and I think the point about corrections, too, is fact-checking leads to fewer corrections, whether it's in the media or otherwise. Mm-hmm. So a company that has to do fewer mea culpas certainly would benefit from something like that.
Before I let you guys go, I'm just wondering if you have any advice for leaders inside newsrooms and outside newsrooms around the responsibility we have to fight for facts and the truth in this evolving media ecosystem.
I think it's important to take a step back and to understand that fact-checking and getting things right is just as important as spelling something correctly. And we all know the importance of that.
Well, not everybody.
Well,
trust me.
Yeah, well, check out my email inbox.
Yeah, exactly. Editors are hard to come by these days. So,
And it's a job in a newsroom that is just as valuable as anything. And I think we kind of need to understand that, and that takes time.
And clearly not everybody's as dedicated as like a Daniel Dale, right?
No.
So that's like level 10 commitment. But
and we know that daily publications simply can't fact check everything, but there has to be a way to do more. And we cannot see it go in the same direction that we are, because we're seeing a lot more problematic content circulating online than we ever have before. And it's going up at a faster rate than the fact check content is.
Right.
So there has to be some movement there, and it has to be something that is taken seriously in newsrooms and any company that's trying to produce credible content.
Interesting.
Yeah. If we want a society that's going to get better from where we are now, we have to be able to actually debate things and discuss things. And if we can't agree on even a rudimentary set of facts about what a problem is, we're never going to get to a point where we can solve a problem. So there has to be a critical mass of sources of information that people can go, all right, I may not agree with the take, but I'm willing to accept that this is a fact and that is a fact.
Right.
And the more organizations that do that, whether it's journalism, whether it's business, whether it's government, whether it's academia, that can get to that place, the healthier we're going to be as we try to figure out what the heck we're going to do as a world in the 21st century.
And I think time and money is too often an excuse here, saying, oh, I don't have enough time, or there's not enough money that we have to make this happen. I think there are creative ways of accessing those resources to get content fact-checked.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like we still have a lot of work left to do.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I appreciate all of your smart thinking today and joining me on the podcast, and look forward to continuing the conversation online. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Sophie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can find us on Twitter. Jack is at CBC Ombud, Mahira is at Mahira Lakshman, and I'm at Sophie Nadeau.